Death rates are declining for many cancers, but unfortunately for those diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, rates are increasing. And we're talking about why this cancer is so deadly and what's on the horizon when it comes to research, early detection, and new therapies. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. And back with us is Dr. Rebecca Minter. She is chair of the Department of Surgery at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. She's a national leader in academic surgery who has a particular interest in the management and treatment of diseases of the pancreas. So as we talk with her, I hope you'll join in. Have you or someone you cared about been diagnosed with pancreatic cancer? What questions do you have about the disease? Join in by calling 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Rebecca Minter, welcome back. Good to have you with us again.
Thank you so much, Larry. It's good to be here.
Let's start with the basics again here. What function does the pancreas play in our bodies?
Sure. So, you know, the pancreas function that people are most familiar with is what we call the endocrine function, or the function that's responsible for helping us manage our blood sugars. So the pancreas secretes a number of hormones, insulin being the most well-known, but there are other hormones it secretes as well that help us manage our blood sugars. So when people have dysfunction of those endocrine cells in their pancreas, they develop diabetes, which is a common condition in our country, unfortunately. The pancreas' second function that is perhaps less well-known, but you may have heard commercials related to this, are that the pancreas produces enzymes that help us in the digestion of fatty foods. So there's a lot of commercials you hear out there of, you know, are you having symptoms of bloating and diarrhea and greasy stools? That's what happens if your body can't absorb the fats that you eat. They come through as diarrhea. And so that's the second function of the pancreas, which are the cells that much more commonly are involved in the development of pancreatic adenocarcinoma, which is the type of pancreas cancer that is most feared.
Yeah. And there are two types of pancreatic cancer, are there not?
That is correct, and it relates to the two different types of cells that we were just discussing. So the most common is our cells that arise from the exocrine function, the ducts in the pancreas that produce those enzymes, and that's pancreatic adenocarcinoma. And when people talk about pancreas cancer, that's usually what they mean, and that represents, you know, 93 to 95% of the cancers that we see. There are also what we call neuroendocrine tumors of the pancreas that arise from those cells that produce those hormones. And so that's the minority of pancreas cancers, and that has a better prognosis in general than adenocarcinoma.
You mentioned neuroendocrine tumors, I believe. Laura in Grand Marsh emailed that in September. She was diagnosed with a small 1.7 centimeter pancreatic neuroendocrine tumor, mm-hmm. and her surgeon's recommending a Whipple procedure, and she's getting a second opinion, and wonders if you could discuss the Whipple procedure and its outcomes. Her tumor is in the head of the pancreas, and she was only discovered because of a flare-up of her gallbladder.
Sure. Well, maybe before I answer the question about the Whipple procedure, I certainly can't give medical advice related to a specific case, but I would like to comment. I think in general, we are finding pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors very frequently on imaging performed for other reasons that are asymptomatic. In fact, that's the way we most commonly identify pancreatic neuroendocrine tumors. So folks come in with appendicitis or kidney stone or gallbladder attack, and we find these small tumors. The guidelines for neuroendocrine tumors, there's two different sets of guidelines, and the cutoff for when we recommend surgery varies. But Many of the guidelines recommend surveillance or watching for tumors that are under 2 centimeters. Some of the guidelines recommend considering surgery for tumors between 1.5 and 2 centimeters. But we definitely follow a path of surveillance for some of these small incidentally found tumors because we know that they are unlikely to behave badly over time, and we can follow them. Unfortunately, we don't have a crystal ball to be able to predict exactly what they will do, but those are what our guidelines suggest currently. Mm. The Whipple procedure is a big operation that we do for any tumor that requires surgery that's in what we call the head of the pancreas, as she noted. And it is a big operation because it's what I call expensive real estate in that location. We have lots of important things that all come together in one place, and to remove a tumor in that location requires us to remove part of the pancreas, the bile duct, part of the stomach usually, and part of the intestine. And then we're plumbers, and we have to put everything back together. So it is a big operation for sure, and not one that we can do very safely here at UW and do frequently, but one that is a big operation and important to go to a center and a surgeon that has a lot of experience.
Hmm. The more deadly cancer, why is it so deadly?
It's a great question. I think there's two important reasons why pancreatic adenocarcinoma is so deadly. The first is that we don't have a great test for finding it early. You know, unlike prostate cancer and breast cancer, where we have screening mammography or screening colonoscopy for colon cancer, screening hasn't been thus far on a total population basis of all patients. We don't have a similar test for pancreas cancer. And because the pancreas is nestled deep in our abdomen, often we don't have symptoms until the tumor is much more progressed. The other important reason, though, is what when we talk about pancreas cancer is that it just tends to be a bad actor, and it tends to send out cells or seeds, if you will, circulating in the body early in its course, and therefore it often presents at a much later stage. So earlier detection is critical and is a huge focus certainly of our work and many others in terms of finding this cancer earlier.
Yeah, it's. I was thinking. Thinking back here in the last few years, I've lost 4 friends to pancreas cancer, and I think in every case it was 4th stage by the time it was discovered.
Yeah, that's unfortunately all too common.
And in all 4 of those cases, my friends lost their lives within a year or so. So there's some thought that the percentage or that the number of these cases is increasing. Is that correct?
That is correct. We expect more than 60,000 Americans will be diagnosed with pancreatic cancer this year alone. So that's 166 new cases every day. Currently, pancreas cancer is the 11th most commonly diagnosed cancer in the United States, but it's very soon going to become the 2nd most deadly cancer behind lung cancer because we've made progress in other cancers where it's been slower in pancreas cancer.
Yeah, is there a reason? Is it just because we're detecting it more, or is there something else going on in our lives or environment that is causing an increase?
It's a really important question, and we can extrapolate based on what we know are risk factors for pancreas cancer, and 2 which are important are obesity and diabetes, which certainly have paralleled this rise in the rise we've seen in pancreas cancer. So that is one working hypothesis, is that those 2 conditions increase our risk for pancreas cancer, and those 2 conditions are certainly much more prevalent as well in our country.
Yeah, but it wasn't the case for all 4 of my friends.
Yeah, it's that It's certainly not.
And so it's not always the case for sure. You wonder if there's something else that what kind of research is going on in that particular area?
So a big area of research and a big focus for our center, which I think offers a lot of hope, is earlier detection. So really, as I mentioned, broad population screening, as we do for breast and colon cancer, which are much more common, hasn't been an effective strategy for pancreas cancer. However, for patients who do have increased risk for pancreas cancer, we do have a focused screening program here at UW Health. It's called our Pancreatic Cancer Prevention Program. And the patients that we follow in that program are those that have any family history that places them at increased risk for the development of pancreas cancer, and we can certainly talk more about what that is, as well as patients who are found to have these mucin-producing cysts in their pancreas that can be a marker of increased risk for pancreas cancer. Through that program and work that others are doing as well in other places, we're really working hard to find markers either on imaging or in sampling the fluid in these cysts and pancreas or in blood tests where we could have earlier detection for patients to try to identify patients who have a lesion that's about to turn into a cancer or an early cancer, because our best chance for curing this cancer is much earlier identification, just as happened with your four friends. Unfortunately, when patients present when it's very advanced, then our opportunity to intervene is very different.
Hmm. And as we look at the catching it early, what are the what are the interventions that you can do to catch it early, given where it is and everything else?
So in the patient population that I just mentioned, we follow those patients with MRI and a combination of MRI and endoscopic ultrasound, which is a scoping procedure where our gastroenterology colleagues can use a scope that has an ultrasound probe on the end of it to look at the pancreas through the stomach, actually. And we talk about those patients all together. We review them with the multidisciplinary team, and we're looking for any subtle changes in the pancreas. And if we see any subtle changes in the pancreas, then we can evaluate further with an endoscopic ultrasound and a biopsy. We don't yet have a blood test that is helpful to us, but that is absolutely the hope for the future, that we could find something in the blood that's what we call a biomarker, circulating DNA or other biomarkers that we can measure and, again, identify patients who are at risk before they present with any symptoms.
Let's take a call. Gina in Elgin, Illinois, what's on your mind?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I recently had a Whipple, and I'm at this point just getting my CT scans every 6 months. So my question was, I know that you just mentioned that it's very difficult to find it early. I think I might have been at stage 2B. And so it's been successful so far, but it's more of, I'm reading a lot about, gut health and the relationship with now managing the diabetes and being on insulin. So I'm wondering if you are doing any of that kind of work, and what would you recommend?
Thank you very much for that question, Gina. I hope you can stay with us. We are going to take a quick look at the news and find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back with Dr. Rebecca Minter, Chair of the Department of Surgery at UW School of Medicine and Public Health, to answer Gina's question and certainly to take your questions as well and answer them at 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. talking about the latest research and treatments for pancreatic cancer on the show today. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Dr. Rebecca Minter. She chairs the Department of Surgery at UW School of Medicine and Public Health, certainly a national leader in academic surgery who has a particular interest in managing and treating diseases of the pancreas. So questions for her, join in at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Dr. Minter, Gina from Elgin, Illinois, joined us just before the news break. And I believe she was asking about the connection between pancreatic cancer and gut health, or if you were doing research in that area.
Sure. I was trying to clarify if she meant post-Whipple or in general.
I think she's still with us. Gina, are you still there?
Yes, I am. Thank you. In general, you know, doing supplements and trying to provide management of your whole, you know, the diabetes and everything. Obviously, eating a good diet and everything, but just how it is tacking on the whole system, just trying to get it back to function as before.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So right after surgery, which it sounds like you're still in that early phase, you know, really focus on protein is important because our bodies heal by protein, and managing our blood sugars is really important all of the time, and especially when you're healing, because higher blood sugars impairs our body's ability to heal. There's a lot of interest in the impact of nutrition with respect to cancer risk and diabetes management, in particular with respect to pancreas cancer. You know, one of the hypotheses is that, you know, tumors thrive in a high sugar environment. Sugar has been impugned broadly in the cancer space. The data is variable, and there's not a clear recommendation there. But in general, a lower sugar diet is probably important and best for us. I think that, you know, otherwise in terms of gut health, in terms of probiotics and things like that, all of those things are probably positive and healthy for us, but there's not a clear direct link in terms of decreasing your risk for pancreas cancer. And really your focus following a Whipple and following surgery is really on just getting enough calories and protein in so that your body can heal from what is a big operation. Most patients get back to really eating a very normal diet, whatever was normal for them. And we, of course, recommend healthy choices and making sure that your carbohydrates or sugar levels are maintained at a low level.
Gina, thank you again. I appreciate your call. Kim in Boulder Junction, it's your turn now. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hello, and thank you for taking my call. Perhaps you answered some of this in the last call, but I'm a type 1 diabetic, and I wonder often, do type 1s have more, are they more at risk for pancreatic cancer, and what can a type 1 do to help prevent that?
So, you know, absolutely we know that kind of long-standing diabetes is a risk factor for the development of pancreatic cancer. Patients who have cystic fibrosis also have increased risk for the development of pancreatic cancer. The best thing that you can do, which is true in terms of, as you know well, from lifelong diabetes, is make sure that you're managing your sugars as well and tightly as you can in collaboration with your endocrinologist, your primary care doctor, and really just being in tune with your body and what's normal for you with your diabetes. One of the early signs that we can see with the development of pancreas cancer is a sudden change in your diabetes, meaning that suddenly, you know, you had been on a really steady regimen with your insulin and your sugars were managed very well, and all of a sudden your sugars are high, your hemoglobin A1C is high, and you haven't changed anything else. That should trigger imaging to look at your pancreas. And because that change in your diabetes can often precede by 6 or 12 months sometimes other overt symptoms that lead you to get imaging for your pancreas cancer. So again, our goal here is earlier detection so that we have more opportunity to intervene.
Kim, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Dennis in Two Rivers, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Dennis.
Hi, thanks, Larry. I was wondering about referral pain as far as detecting cancer, because when I had pancreas and gallbladder trouble, I had pain in my back. Now, I knew about referred pain in front under my sternum, but I wasn't expecting it to be in my back. So just as far as when people have pancreatic cancer, could they have pain that they're not recognizing?
Yep, you're very wise. The pancreas actually sits towards the back. So even though it's, quote, in our abdomen, it's in the posterior part towards our back. So, and because of where the pancreas sits, it sits right on top of some big blood vessels that have nerves, and that nerve pain is felt kind of right in the middle of your back. And that's common, as you noted, with pancreatitis. If you have a gallstone that causes pancreatitis, you can have pain in the back. You also can have pain in the back with pancreas cancer. And you're absolutely right, because people don't think too much sometimes about low back pain or mid back pain because it's so common, it is discounted and not further evaluated. So if you have the back pain that we see with pancreas cancer tends, unfortunately, to come with more advanced disease when those nerves are encased and involved. But if you have back pain that's not radiating, that doesn't change, that doesn't move, and nothing really relieves it, then that is important to call to your doctor's attention again to see if further imaging might be warranted.
Hmm. Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate it. Rick in Gays Mills, on to you now. Hi, Rick.
Hi. A 30-year-old young man in good health whose father died of pancreatic cancer at age 54. At what age should that person begin screening, and what does that screening look like?
Yes, great question. So we know that, you know, only about 10 to 15% that we can identify today of pancreatic cancer is inherited. There certainly is some increased risk with one first-degree relative. We typically, in our program, we would recommend screening to ensue 10 years younger than the youngest relative, so at the age of 44 in this instance. We also would recommend, you know, meeting with one of our genetics counselors and one of our GI cancer specialists to talk about whether or not genetic testing makes sense. Even when we don't find anything on our genetic testing, if there's a first-degree relative or, importantly, two relatives, say a father and an uncle, or a father and a grandfather, or a father and a grandmother, then those patients, even with normal, with no finding of genetic abnormality in their genes, we still would recommend screening because there's a condition called familial pancreatic cancer when you have two or more relatives with pancreas cancer, and you would qualify for surveillance and screening in that case. But we see lots of patients who have only one first-degree relative, and they meet with our GI genetics team and talk about whether surveillance makes sense. And it's usually 10 years younger than the youngest relative.
Yeah. Rick, thanks very much for calling. And let's move on to Lynn in Madison. Hi, Lynn.
Yes, hi. I think you were at least partially answering my question. My husband was diagnosed at the age of 45, and he did not have diabetes. He was thin. He wasn't a sugar eater, so
yeah.
No risk factors. And I do have two children, one who's 30 and one who's 27. And so if I understand from your last call, the one who's 30 should start to be screened when he's 35 or so. And I wanted to know more specific information about how to access the screening program at UW, because I just went online and I wasn't seeing it. And also if there are screening programs like this across the country. He lives in the Bay Area. I am pretty concerned.
Sure.
Sure, absolutely. So the program here at UW. It's called our UW Health Pancreatic Cancer Prevention Program. If you search for that, it should come up. I just searched for it, and it comes up. So it's our Pancreas Cancer Prevention Clinic, and there's information there about our program. So if the affected person is no longer living, then we always recommend evaluating and meeting with our genetics team, the child, in your case, your son or daughter, with our team, and they will talk about testing. You know, with your husband being so young, typically they will recommend genetic testing to look for any mutations in the genes. Are these programs available across the country? Most certainly in the Bay Area through UCSF. I'm sure that you could identify, or at Stanford could identify a team of doctors who could evaluate your son or daughter. The screening programs are not as widespread as we would like in terms of a truly integrated multidisciplinary program as we have here. Part of that has been because there's been such nihilism about pancreas cancer in terms of people not believing that screening works. Again, that is not our belief at all, and especially as we're seeing more promising therapies and outcomes with earlier detection, I think that these programs will grow. But we're certainly happy to – we have patients who come from other states as well when they're home for the holidays or other times. And since this is typically a once a year kind of visit, we can accommodate folks from other places as well.
Lynn, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in too, 800-642-1234. Brad in Minnesota emailed to ask if there's a correlation between gallbladder removal of either increasing or decreasing the chance of pancreatic cancer. He had his gallbladder removed 4 years ago. His father died of pancreatic cancer at 64. He is 50.
So there's no known link between gallbladder removal, which is most commonly done for gallstones, and the development of pancreatic cancer. I think as one of our earlier callers noted, you know, sometimes we find abnormalities in the pancreas when people come in for gallbladder evaluation, but there's no increased risk if you've had your gallbladder removed for benign reasons in terms of pancreas cancer. I think, you know, as we've discussed earlier, having one relative, especially over the age of 60, does not really significantly increase one's risk. Two relatives does. Again, we're always happy to talk with anybody who has a family history of pancreatic cancer, because sometimes there's other cancers in the family that might be relevant in terms of increased risk for pancreas cancer as well, such as breast or ovarian cancer. Syndromes can sometimes also develop pancreas cancer.
Let's talk about treatments a bit. What treatments are available, and are there any new therapies or what therapies are looking promising?
So really the greatest movement we've seen in pancreas cancer in the last few years has been really a pivot to more effective chemotherapy. So historically we would give one or two drugs, but not with tremendous impact. We now give a cocktail of drugs, a combined chemotherapy called FOLFIRINOX, and this really has significantly improved the efficacy of being able to treat pancreas cancer, both localized and distant pancreas cancer. On top of that, though, which is much more exciting, I think, is the concept of precision medicine. All tumors are different. And as we learn more about what the exact collection of mutations or altered DNA is in a patient-specific tumor, we can look at that and see maybe there are other drugs that we use for other diseases that might be specifically effective in this tumor. So all of our patients with pancreas cancer, we always start with traditional therapy, but we get tissue and we look at the mutations in that tumor and decide through what's called our molecular tumor board, which is a group of colleagues who evaluate the patient's individual tumor and see if there are other unique treatments for that patient that might be effective. Lastly, I'll mention that this is why genetics is so important. You know, it's recommended that any patient with pancreas cancer have genetic testing. And the reason for that is because, again, 10 to 15% of the time we will find that there's a baseline mutation in their all of the cells in their body. But that can also sometimes offer unique opportunities for better treatments for that cancer. So this more tailored approach or this precision medicine approach will be a really important part of how we treat pancreas cancer in the future.
Yeah. Well, Thursday, November 18th is World Pancreatic Cancer Awareness Day. I know UW Health is doing a virtual presentation, I think from 4 to 6 that day. Tell us about that.
So that's an event that's being put on by our Pancreatic Cancer Task Force here at UW Health, which is a group of really fantastic friends and family members and patients themselves who have been impacted by pancreatic cancer. It's an educational program, and everyone is welcome. It's really, as well, a great group of folks for people who are passionate about being part of finding a cure for this disease. The Pancreatic Cancer Act Task Force welcomes people to participate. But that will be open to the public, and it's meant to be an educational event to learn more.
And how do we find that again?
The event is on November 18th, and we will send you some more information. I just have the flyer.
But we would go online somewhere to get. You don't
exactly.
have to sign up. You don't have to sign up in advance for this, do you?
It says to register for this free event, visit uwhealth.org/PCANIGHT, Pecan Night.
You know what? Jill Nadeau was going to put that up on our page.
Perfect.
Go to ideas at WPR.org/Larry, and we'll have that link up there. For sure. Someone else wondered, what can be done to prevent pancreatic cancer?
So, you know, we wish we had a magic recipe for that. You know, it always feels a little bit unsatisfactory, but what we tell patients are the following. We know that both the important things you can do that you have control over are not causing further damage to your pancreas. We know that pancreas cancer develops from these mutations or altered DNA in the pancreas, so we don't want to alter it anymore. So no smoking ever, and alcohol really only in moderation. Alcohol is also a toxin to the pancreas, and that can accelerate changes that might already be at play in your pancreas. The only other things you can really do is maintain a healthy weight and diet, and if you have diabetes, really try to manage your blood sugars. And keep your diabetes well controlled. There's really, other than, you know, those sort of following good healthy practices, there's no other dietary changes or other things that have been shown to prevent pancreas cancer.
Exercise,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Goes along with that healthy diet.
Elroy in Loyal has a question. Let's go there. Elroy, thanks for calling.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I had two uncles who passed away from pancreatic cancer, both at a relatively young age, 65 and 66. Their four other siblings all lived into their 90s with very few health issues. The common denominators, both these uncles were in the military. They both were heavy smokers, and I believe they enjoyed the occasional glass of whiskey. So what do you think were their risk factors involved there?
Well, most certainly tobacco, we know, is a significant risk factor, and as is alcohol, especially if the alcohol is of heavier use, for sure. You know, we know with genetic mutations that not everybody will have them in a family, and somebody has to have them first. If there haven't been those subsequent generations with pancreas cancer, they're probably isn't an indication for screening beyond what the general population would have. If you had a first-degree relative that was impacted and your, let's say those two brothers were your father's brothers and your father was not impacted, then you probably would not be recommended for screening.
All right, there we go. Thanks very much for that question. Appreciate it very much. So just in conclusion, the last minute or so here, Dr. Minter, any last words on pancreatic cancer?
I think I know I'd just like to leave us all with some hope. I know it's a very scary cancer and one that we really haven't historically moved the needle on, but we're really seeing a lot of exciting things coming down the road, again, with the ability to have earlier detection and we hope more effective therapies through personalized medicine and understanding individually how tumors will respond. So I think being aware, self-aware of your own health and anything that seems abnormal to you, make sure that you follow up with your physician and seek further evaluation. But there is, we believe, hope on the horizon.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Minter. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us. Dr. Rebecca Minter, Chair of the Department of Surgery at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. And don't forget that World Pancreatic Cancer Awareness Day, UW Health holding a virtual presentation from 4 to 6. And you can participate in that. We'll have that up on our Larry Mueller Show page. Just go to today's date and look in the program notes and you will find it there. Tomorrow, landscape designer Daryl Morrison has a new book out. We'll talk with him about it. And then Dan Small talks about Deer Hunt 2021. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.